So I've watched this interview with Bret Baier and Kamala Harris a few times. Can't put my finger on it, but something is...
Did you learn anything?
Yeah, good question.
A lot of vibes there, wasn't there?
I think she's just a very nasty person. I think that's probably accurate. What I came away with more than anything. Bret Baier clearly went in with one objective, and that is to ask her questions that she never gets asked, because journalism is dead for the most part in this country, especially among the corporate media types that are essentially arms of her campaign and of any liberal endeavor. So, you know, she's a candidate for President of the United States who's really not been tested like a candidate traditionally would be, which is not good. It's the whole idea. It's the whole role of journalism to provide that probing of a candidate to make sure they have the mettle to be what they want to be. She went into the interview with a completely different agenda, and that is to talk as much about Donald Trump as humanly possible. So I guess her strategy is, I'm on a network where the majority of the viewers are likely in favor of Trump's candidacy over mine, so I'm going to go in and just say a bunch of nasty things about him, like they hadn't heard it before, and therefore maybe pick up a few votes. I don't know. But one listener just said, like Bret Baier, I'm dumber for having watched an interview last night with Kamala. Took a long time to get my brain cells finally to kick in.
I thought he did okay. I thought he could have been a lot more in a lot more interface. You know, and they're like, well, you know, the respect, let Madam Vice President. No. You've used words and you've used phrases and you've said things that are vile, and you're going to account for them, right? So you're going to need to give me an answer. You know, and I admit, with me, you know, bro, with me, she'd walk out. That's why she would never do it. I mean, that's as easy as she's going to get on the conservative side of the aisle as far as anybody asking her any real questions. And it was, to me, it was still weak-kneed.
You think Bret Baier was weak-kneed?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
I actually think if I
he did okay.
If I pulled out every question, just his question, and you listen to it, you'd say, she never gets asked those questions. So he's actually asking her things that she should answer. The problem is, this woman, and there's some behind-the-scenes drama in all this, too, evidently. So the interview taped at 5 p.m. Eastern. The show airs at 6 p.m. Eastern. It's scheduled for 30 minutes. Evidently, her staff shows up ahead of the interview beginning, saying, we're going to do 20 minutes now.
Yeah, it was 25, then it went to 20, and then they didn't start till 17 after 5.
Right, she showed up late.
Yeah, she
showed up late. What a Bush League move, which obviously was designed to say, well, sorry, we're not going to do the time we did because we know you've got to get this thing turned around to air. So
I would, you know what I said earlier? I would look right at her and said, well, that's okay. We'll just go 30 minutes and we'll air it the day. We'll air it on
Well,
on
and he
Friday
clearly tried to do that, and then he found out that, you know, you're trying to do an interview. Why? Four people are waving their hands like, stop, stop, stop. You know, I mean, it just is, it's Bush League all around.
Gotta go. We have to go.
Yeah.
So sorry.
I don't know how somebody could watch the segment specifically on the border and not come away with the fact that, look, this woman is not answering the questions. She clearly is trying to divert. But there's some questions I wouldn't mind the answer to. That's, I think, the... I mean, the lion's share of this interview, about half of it was on border-related policy. So I want to break that down a little bit today and spend some time on that. There were some other highlights as well that we're just going to spend a good chunk of time today going through the interview, if you haven't heard it, and parsing it out a little bit today on the program. Donald Trump yesterday also did an interview. It was actually a town hall, but took questions from women, voters. And we have some highlights from that, too. That was pretty good yesterday. Also on the program today, Scott Lauser, he's a state representative from Minot. He has a alternative property tax relief proposal. We're going to share that with you. It includes a cap, by the way, on local spending, which I argue is the only way you actually get to real reform. Otherwise, you're going to remove a type of property tax, but just have a different tax, and your actual out-of-pocket is not going to change when the dust settles. You've got to say, look, there's just going to have to be a cap on spending, and if you want to exceed the cap, come back and ask the voters, give them the reason why you need to grow it. So we're going to unpack his proposal. My argument on Measure 4 is no, poorly crafted, no plan, and as easy as people want to make it out to say, you can find the money. You're talking about finding $3.15 billion out of a $6 billion budget. I would challenge any household to say, if tomorrow you need to cut your spending in half, how do you do that without impacting things that are really essential to how your family operates? Now, you can, and you can't expect the government to do the same. And nobody says, here's what I would cut, so you could have an idea of, okay, if we cut that, here's what it would mean to me. They say, figure it out. Just figure it out. So there's really, Measure 4 is poorly thought out. It gives a tax break to BNSF and oil companies and other income-producing property that has not sought a tax relief bill, again, because it was poorly written. So on the other hand, property taxes suck. And they do, and that's because spending continues to go up. There's no check on spending. So what I'm for is an alternative, and Scott Lauser's got one. So we're going to unpack that a little bit today on the program. Also, we had a gentleman call yesterday, and was raising some interesting points. He's a farmer from Minnesota. And here's what I took away from that conversation, Kevin. You tell me if I heard this correctly. He was saying a lot of the things that we wonder, like, where is this coming from? I think he specifically mentioned children wanting to change their gender, as an example, are coming because of what's in our food. Because of micro something or another that's in our food, and that we need. That's why this happening. And he had a solution for it. And we took his call right before we had a guest waiting to talk about. I forget the guest yesterday, but I said, you know, you're raising some interesting things. You're a farmer. I want to know more what you're talking about. So Mike from Hitterdahl, farmer out there, going to join us today in the program. But that was my. I mean, I left that call intrigued.
Yeah,
that he's bringing something to the table that I really haven't thought of before. I guess
it's come up more. You know, more for me, it started with appeal. The stuff that they're spraying on of a video that I saw, and Bridget checked into it, and she said nothing to see here. But I think there is something to see there. Gates owns stock in the company or whatever. He was the one promoting it or whatever. But it's more than just, you know, things they're spraying to preserve our produce. You know, it's the processed foods. It's the, I mean, it's the literally the poisons that are in it. RFK Jr. And, you know, my thing, we all know it's there. You know, the last thing you should be eating is Kraft mac and cheese ever. It's like the worst food on the planet.
I grew up on it.
Well, I know. We're feeding it to our kids. Everybody, make some mac and cheese. You know, terrible, awful nastiness in that. And they're pointing out now the ingredients and stuff. So, and Michael B., I think, a good resource on just how he's running his farm and not doing those things. And, you know, I don't know, but I think there's a lot of evidence. And if anybody's more qualified to take on that pharma, USDA, FDA, all of the cabal of all of it is RFK Jr. So I'm glad he's on the team.
Yeah, and he's certainly raised these issues quite a bit. I don't ever hear RFK Jr. Connecting the food problem, as he sees it, to the gender confusion of youngsters being prevalent in a way that had before.
Though, yeah.
Yeah, he ties it more to disease and being unhealthy. What I heard Mike tying it to was literally with kids making decisions like that they shouldn't be making, or their hormones are confusing them, and that it was things in the food that were altering that. So mildly interesting. Want to find out more about sort of his take on all that today.
Yeah,
so
we'll, for sure.
We'll continue that conversation, which started yesterday on the program as well. So we have a big event tonight. There's still time to join us if you'd like. Michelle Tafoya's in the house. Liz Collins in the house. We'll tell you about that when we come back, and give you one last chance for the details on that if you'd like to join us tonight. Maybe you've heard about it for the last couple months and say, oh, it's here. Okay, I can go tonight. I'm going to go. So stay tuned for all that and more coming up on What's on Your Mind. Buckle up, Thursday edition straight ahead. Lovely bumper music here, Kev. Thank you very much for that. That's very nice.
Alan Jackson, 66 today. Got a request for this one, actually. This just gave me an idea for a Trump parody. Remember when gas was only $2?
Yeah, I like that. Yeah, I like
Remember
that.
When your 401k was rocking?
Hey, folks, did you know that Thor Buildings provides post-frame construction to meet your livestock and all agriculture needs? Having the right size building that can house all your farm equipment or your livestock vital to the success of your farming business. You know that, right? You should also know the team at Thor Buildings will design that farm building for maximum efficiency. Their buildings are customized based on seasonal weather for our area in which you're located, and they're working with you every step of the way to give you a farm building that meets all of your needs. Find out more at ThorBuildings.com. 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 I want to spend the majority of our time breaking down this interview on Bret Baier with Kamala Harris related to the border issue. But there are a couple other highlights that I think are rather amusing. And again, you and I maybe are going to disagree on Bret Baier's performance because I thought he did a pretty good job of asking questions that never get asked. And
oh, no, yeah, no. He did a good job. I think he could have been a lot more aggressive and, you know, shut her down a lot more. But, yeah, no, it was a lot more than we've seen so far.
Here is one of the I think, again, more bizarre things, this whole new way forward idea, and her explanation of that I thought was a pretty good exchange.
Frankly, exhausted of Bret.
More than 70% of people tell the country is on the wrong track. They say the country is on the wrong track. If it's on the wrong track, that track follows 3.5 years of you.
Yeah, you're the conductor, lady. 79%. 79% say we're on the wrong track. And you're the vice president. This is again, something that you want to just scream at your TV in most interviews. See how she deals with this one.
Being vice president and President Biden being president. That is what they're saying, 79% of them. Why are they saying that? If you're turning the page, you've been in office for 3.5 years.
And Donald Trump has been running for office.
But you've been the person holding the office.
Come on.
Madam
you
Vice
and I
President.
Both know what I'm talking about. You and I both know what I'm talking about.
I actually don't.
That was a little bizarre, too. You and I both know what we're talking about.
That's an assumptive. That's a tactic. That's like people that say, right? Right? So when we say this, right? Right? No, wrong. Wrong. Wrong.
I loved when he said, actually, I don't know what you're talking about. You know?
No idea.
Yeah. Okay, here she goes.
What are you talking about?
What I'm talking about is that over the last decade, over the last decade, it is clear to me, and certainly the Republicans who are on stage with me,
in the world. Is this a word salad for crying out loud?
Yeah, masterclass. Never answered really one of the questions. Not one of them.
No, again, good questions, horrific answers, and I guess short of just saying, okay, you're not answering my question, so let's ask you another one. I don't know how Bret handled it.
I think he did do a good job of not letting her word salad too much. We said that this morning. It's like you and I talk about with Kevin Cramer. I love him to death. But, dude, yes or no will do. Yeah, that sucks. I would have never voted for that next. That's what I love about Kelly Armstrong. For the most part, it's yes, no, not going to do that. Here's why. Boom, boom, boom. Next. I love the stories and things, but that's all she is, man. She is a storyteller. Quit telling stories and answer the question. I think he did a good job with that.
Trace Gallagher did a little analysis on the later night Fox program. I thought did a pretty good job of breaking it down and what her game plan was going in. Listen to this.
Bret Baier's exceptional interview with Kamala Harris was very instructive. Not the answers, mind you, because for the most part, the vice president skipped the content and skirted the question.
Keep going there. Trace.
Because for the most part, the vice president skipped the content and skirted the questions. What Common Sense found instructive was watching Kamala Harris filibuster and fill the conversation with a litany of unnecessary words. She would say, "Let me be clear," and then would fail to be clear. Brett asked her about the border crisis. She talked about Trump. She was reminded that her campaign slogan is a new way forward and that she repeatedly says it's time to turn the page. And when Brett asked her, quote, what are you turning the page from? She said, quote, from the last decade in which we have been burdened by the rhetoric coming from Donald Trump. Common sense would point out that Trump was only in power for part of the last decade. Democrats held power for most of the last decade. And that turning the page is a direct slam against Biden-Harris. She refused to talk about her policies and then advised us to go to her website, which also does not talk about her policies. The interview reminded common sense of a quarterback who takes a knee at the end of the game, meaning Harris was done competing and intent on running out the clock. Problem is, she let the time expire without putting any points on the board.
I like that. The common sense department from Trace Gallagher, they're a pretty good analysis of
That's
all
really
that.
Well put.
Yeah,
really
it is.
Well put.
It is. He did a nice analysis of the whole thing, I thought.
Yeah, just going to run out the clock here.
Yeah.
So anyway, yeah, we're vibing.
Yeah.
As I've made clear many times before, when I'm making something clear, it's very clear that I'm making it clear.
And, you know, she's a master at that the time with,
yes,
let me be clear.
Nothing. And, nothing.
Yeah, exactly.
It's like Chinese food. You eat it like half hour later, you're hungry again. There's nothing there.
I thought about the most damning thing she said is that, you know, she's been asked point blank before, how would you be different than Biden? And she's not been able to answer it. And she kind of threw Biden under the bus. That was about the only thing that she said that probably would have torqued off the Biden camp. So there'd be more unrest between the two. But we're going to spend some time on the whole border back and forth coming up here because it's an important issue to people, and see if you were as frustrated as I was after that exchange. Hey, tonight, the election, the truth, and you, it's finally here. We'll be at the beautiful Avalon Event Center in Fargo tonight for this event with Michelle Tafoya. She's been on some of the biggest stages in professional sports, host of the Michelle Tafoya podcast on Salem Networks, megastar in social media. Liz Collin, too, decorated career down in the Twin Cities in the news industry down there, and the Fall of Minneapolis documentary, and now a new one, We the People, versus the Minnesota on the first responders that have been under attack in Minnesota. She's wonderful. And so the two of them, we'll hear from each of them. Steve Hallstrom is going to sit down and do a little panel discussion with them as well. It'll fill your bucket. These are two well-connected, very credible media personalities that can shine a light on the election and the impact it'll have on our region. And who better to discuss what impact Minnesota Governor Tim Walz would have on the country if he and Kamala Harris were elected as well. There's a VIP event at 5:30. We have special discounts for teachers, veterans, law enforcement members. Tickets start at $15. Go to am1100theflag.com to get your tickets. It's tonight at the Avalon Event Center. Okay? And, Kev, I understand you're going to do a little open as well. So you're part of the show.
I'm opening the show. I'm kind of pumped.
Yeah.
We're going to have some fun. See who's there. Meet a few people in the audience and fire everybody up.
Yeah. So you need this kind of stuff leading up to the
election. I need to vent a little bit, too. Yeah. So I'm just going to need a few minutes tonight to vent a little bit to get it
That's
going,
okay.
too.
You got it.
Just a few things that I got to get off my chest.
So don't
All
want,
right, we'll
you,
do that too.
You don't want to miss Kev venting. That's going to be great. Hey, we're brought to you today by Chose Investments, KJOSinvestments.com. Land, commercial real estate, they can help. Planning a development, talk to them first. Chose Investments, KJOSinvestments.com. More What's on Your Mind straight ahead. Welcome to What's on Your Mind. Counting down to Election Day, inside of 20 days now. And finally, we have a Fox News interview to analyze with Kamala Harris. Good questions from Brett Baer. Questions that never get asked of Kamala Harris, but a filibuster, basically, from her. Seems as though what Brett Baer was trying to do is get her to answer questions that she'd never get asked and find out sort of where she stands on these issues. She just wanted to talk about Donald Trump. So, and I actually think they both succeeded. Him in asking the questions that never get asked. Didn't get any answers in her on talking about Donald Trump. The big issue most of the time in the interview is spent on the border, so we're going to break that down here a little bit, and let's get your analysis of this, and Kevin and I will give our two cents as well and talk about that coming up. Dean Wysocki is here, our chief meteorologist.
According to Drudge Report, she ate him up. Did you see that?
Come on.
Oh, go check it out.
The Drudge Report is
so bad. It was just...
It is part of the Trump derangement syndrome faction of the media. Yeah. Yeah, and a few people said that as well. I don't think you watch an interview and say she ate him up. I think she succeeded in not answering questions.
Yeah.
So I don't know if you call that a victory for her or what, but, you know. I think if you watch it, though, you're going, this woman's not answering the questions, right? I mean, I think anybody with any common sense watching going, good question. Why don't you answer the question? I don't know.
Been asking that for about 4 years.
Right?
with her and Biden both.
Exactly. So anyway, we're going to break down a good chunk of this interview this hour and get your take on it on the program. You call us 701-271-1100. Text us at 701-237-1590. Let's first find out how this weather is going to operate as we near closer to the weekend throughout the region. What you got, Dino?
Well, I'll tell you what. We've got, for this time of the year, I mean, we've had snow this time of the year already. We've had basically October can bring you everything but the kitchen sink. And we got some pretty quiet, mellow weather with temperatures remaining above normal. Today we're looking at sunny and windy conditions across the central and the eastern part of the state. We'll see clouds increase out west with showers coming into the western part of the state late in the day. We'll have highs in the mid-50s out west, 60s in the central part of the state, and 70s in the east. And then tonight, or I should say tomorrow, we're looking at cloudy skies, scattered showers in the central and east. Yeah, finally, some I'd say much-needed rainfall, but we're not going to see much in the way of rainfall, but we'll take what we can get. Highs on Friday in the 50s. And then Saturday, we'll see a decrease in clouds with highs in the upper 50s to low 60s across the state. And then Sunday, the mild weather returns with highs in the 70s across the state with breezy conditions on Sunday. So a pretty decent weekend. We'll see a little rain before we get to the weekend, but not much. We're looking at generally a tenth of an inch or less as those showers move from the western part of the state to the east on Friday. So not a lot of rain, but again, we'll take anything we can get at this point. It's been super, super dry.
Sure has. Yep. Thank you, sir.
You bet.
Dean Wysocki, our chief meteorologist. The weather brought to you by Schmitz Gems, the hardware store for women. Make Schmitz Gems and fine jewelry your diamond destination. Locally owned with in-house custom goldsmiths. You'll find them in Fargo, corner 42nd Street, 32nd Avenue South. Schmitz Gems and fine jewelry. All right. A lot of talk shows will do little bits and pieces of the interview. Try as I might, this is in total 20-some minutes. Supposed to be 30, didn't make it to 30 because she showed up late for it. Another little strategy that you play when you're running a nasty campaign. Yes, we'll agree to a 30-minute interview. Oh, we're late. I'm sorry, this interview will have to be shortened. And then it's a way to ice the kicker, as I think Brett Baer called it. But here's what I'm looking for. Questions she never get asked. How many of these do we hear in this interview? Questions she never get asked, and then actual answers to those questions. Let's see what we can find here. First on this border exchange. Get ready to be frustrated, but here we go.
Madam Vice President, thank you for the time.
Thank you. It's good to be with you, Brett.
You know, voters tell pollsters all over the country and here in Pennsylvania that immigration is one of the key issues that they're looking at this election, and specifically the influx of illegal immigrants from more than 150 countries. How many illegal immigrants would you estimate your administration has released into the country over the last 3.5 years?
Okay. I don't know that she's ever been asked that question before. Give me the number. We hear 3 million, 6 million, 10 million, 15 million, 20 million. How many illegals under your watch came in? Question. Wait for the answer.
Well, I'm glad you raised the issue of immigration because I agree with you. It is a topic of discussion that people want to rightly have. And you know what I'm going to talk about.
Yeah, but
right
do you,
now,
just a number. Is, do you but, think it's but, 1 million, 3 million?
Brett, let's just get to the point.
He's trying to get to the point. He's asked you what the number is. What's the number?
Okay, the point is that we have a broken immigration system that needs to be repaired.
So your Homeland Security Secretary said that 85% of apprehensions.
I'm not finished. We have
it's a rough estimate of 6 million people have been released into the country.
And do you agree with him? Is it 6 million?
Good for him.
Is that the number?
Just finish. I'll get to the question. I promise you.
I was beginning to answer.
And when you came into office, your administration immediately reversed a number of Trump border policies.
Never get asked this. Never.
I was beginning to answer.
Never. Talk about what you reversed causing the problem. Here we go.
Most significantly, the policy that required illegal immigrants to be detained through deportation, either in the U.S. or in Mexico. And you switched that policy. They were released from custody awaiting trial. So instead, included in those were a large number of single men, adult men, who went on to commit heinous crimes. So looking back, do you regret the decision to terminate Remain in Mexico at the beginning of your administration?
All right, there's another question. Your policy reversal caused this problem, so you regret that. She's not going to answer the number, so let's find out if she regrets reversing the policy.
At the beginning of our administration, within practically hours of taking the oath, the first bill that we offered Congress, before we worked on infrastructure, before the Inflation Reduction Act, before the Chips and Science Act,
okay, yeah,
before the bipartisan Safer Communities Act,
chewing the clock,
the first
without an answer,
bill,
without an
practically
answer,
within hours of taking the oath, was a bill to fix our immigration system.
Yes, ma'am. It was called the U.S. Citizenship Act of 2000.
Exactly.
It was amnesty, was what it was.
One. It was essentially a pathway to citizenship.
Thank you. A pathway to citizenship. So it didn't fix anything. And by the way, the question was, do you regret reversing the policies that caused the problem? Have we got an answer coming?
May I finish responding, please?
But
you have to let me finish.
You
please.
Had the White House and the House and the Senate,
I'm
and they
the
didn't bring up
of
that
responding
bill.
Thank you. He goes back to say, okay, this bill you introduced on day one that was so magical, you had the House, they were Democratic controlled. You had the Senate, they were Democratic controlled. You had the White House, and you didn't even get the bill to be brought up for a vote. How's that for failure?
Define responding.
Right. Okay, here we go.
The point you're raising,
okay,
and I'd like to finish.
Yes, ma'am.
We recognized from day one that to the point of this being your first question, it is a priority.
And we failed miserably
for us as a nation and for the American people. And our focus has been on fixing a problem.
How's that gone for you?
How's it going for Aurora, Springfield?
You fixed the problem?
New York, Chicago.
And from day one, then, we have done a number of things.
What were they? Undo what Trump put in place that actually worked.
Including to address our asylum system and put more resources, getting more judges.
Yeah, you proposed that. None of it happened.
To do to tighten up penalties and increase penalties for illegal crossings.
These, again, are proposals that never got anywhere.
What we needed to do to deal with points of entry between border entry points. That's the work we did. And we worked on supporting what was a bipartisan effort, including some of the most conservative members of the United States Congress, to actually strengthen the border.
So what she has just said there is that this was a priority for them, demonstrated by a piece of legislation they introduced on day one that didn't even get brought up for a vote under full Democratic control.
No. Zero wall funding, by the way, in that bill.
And
zero.
And a bunch of other things that were in a quote-unquote bipartisan bill.
Yeah, right.
That they couldn't get passed and now blame Donald Trump for.
There you go.
Yeah. So questions she never gets asked. One, how many illegals are in? Two, do you regret reversing Trump's policies? Answers to those questions so far, Kev? Zero.
Yep, I got a goose egg, too. I'm looking for them.
I would add a third question she never gets asked. You had the House, the Senate, and the White House. The bill never even got brought up for a bill. Isn't that a failure? Never gets asked that. Good one, Brett. Back on What's On Your Mind, brought to you today by PetroServe USA, the home of home cooking and grab-and-go convenience. Thursday means we've got a great menu out there. Let's take a look. Bacon Cheeseburger Mac, the 45th Fargo location, 12th Avenue and I-29 Fargo. Meatball sub today. You have downtown Fargo pulled pork. How's that sound? West Fargo, Tater Tot Hot Dish or Beef Stew. Cheesy Beef and Potatoes in Harwood. Chicken and Gravy in Valley City. Taco Mac in Wahpeton, lasagna in Castleton. Ada has Taco Mac. Lasagna is Yulin. PetroServe USA, home cooking, grab-and-go convenience. All right, more of this interview. Some of your feedback, by the way, coming in. Patrick emails, Ms. Harris seems unable to understand that we do not have a broken immigration system. We have a broken border, courtesy of Ms. Harris. The immigration system worked prior to her tenure. Ms. Harris' memory may be alcohol-fogged. However, her Homeland Security stooge, Mayorkas, clearly enunciated in 2021 that Biden-Harris had completely undone and reversed previous working immigration policies. He actually was quite proud of the fact that they eliminated Trump policies. Patrick goes on to say, she is either too inept to understand or she chooses not to. Either default disqualifies her from further consideration.
Yeah. Darcy called in. He said, one question I would ask her is, does Alejandro Mayorkas keep his job?
That'd be
great
a good
question.
That'd be a good question. Yeah, that'd be a good question for sure. Let's see here. Let's pick up more of the interview. Okay, here we go. We're listening for questions she's never asked and answers to those questions. Here we go.
That border bill would have put 1,500 more border agents at the border, which is why I believe the Border Patrol agents supported the bill. It would have allowed us to stem the flow of fentanyl coming into the United States, which is a scourge affecting people of every background, every geographic location in our country, killing people. It would have allowed us to put more resources into prosecuting transnational criminal organizations, which I have done.
Yes, ma'am.
As the Attorney General, former Attorney General of a border state.
Madam Vice President, a couple of things.
Prosecuted trafficking of drugs, guns, and human beings. And Donald
Trump,
but let me just finish.
Six Democrats voted against that bill.
Learned about that bill and told them to kill it.
By the way, something new in that that never gets brought up.
No, he didn't. He didn't tell them to kill it either. Well, he wasn't even in office.
Yeah, I mean, that you're right. But he did get in, Brett Baer. I'm going to put this to number four. If this bill is so great, why did six Democrats vote against it? You don't hear that anywhere. So thank you for that. Yeah, so here we keep going.
Because he preferred to run on a problem instead of fixing a problem. And in this election, this is rightly a discussion that the American people want to have. And what they want are solutions, and they want a president of the United States who's not playing political games with the issue.
I hear you.
But actually is focused on fixing it.
Six Democrats voted against that bill. It would have allowed 1.8 million illegal immigrants into the country a year. A lot of conservatives had a problem with it.
Thank you. Thank you. Very, very, very key that he actually brought that up. This bill you're touting said it was okay for 5,000 illegal immigrants to come across the border every day. Never gets brought up. What else is in the bill? Thank you, Brett.
These are the six Democrats. But more importantly, back to the original premise, Jocelyn Nungeri, Rachel Morin, Lakin Riley, they are young women who were brutally assaulted and killed by some of the men who were released at the beginning of the administration, well before a negotiated bipartisan bill. Former President Clinton actually referred to Lakin Riley Sunday, campaigning for you in Georgia, saying if those men had been properly vetted, Lakin Riley probably would not have been killed.
Boom! Glad to have that one there. She got asked about Clinton saying exactly what we've all been saying. If you would have vetted these people wouldn't have been dead. Bill Clinton, her surrogate, on the campaign trail. Thank you.
So if it wouldn't have happened, this is well before any negotiation. This is well before Donald Trump got involved in the politics. This is a specific policy decision by your administration to release these men into the country. So what I'm saying to you,
do you owe those families an apology? Let me just say, first of all, those are tragic cases. There's no question about it.
The question was, do you owe them an apology? Never gets asked. Thank you for asking it. What's the answer?
There's no question about that.
Okay, I think you've repeated that three times now.
And I can't imagine the pain that the families of those victims...
Very empathetic of you, but the question was, do you apologize to them?
...have experienced for a loss that should not have occurred.
Thank you. Are you apologizing to them for that?
So that is true. It is also true that if a border security had actually been passed 9 months ago...
That has nothing to do with, as he said, these incidents that happened before that stupid, worthless, bipartisan border bill you keep parroting gets brought up, which, by the way, would have codified catch and release, let in 1.8 million illegals a year, funded sanctuary cities, funded the NGOs so they could move illegals to where you live.
It was a pathway bill.
It was actually, it gave money to illegals for lawyers.
Yep. It's what they've wanted for a long time with the people that were already here illegally.
Nothing in it to deport illegals, by the way, but
no,
fixing
no.
the problem they caused. No immediate wall funds and really sketchy wording on even the funding dedicated for the wall. And it had $60 billion for it in Ukraine, okay? And she keeps parroting it. But the question was, do you apologize to these families.
It would be 9 months that we would have had more border agents at the border, more support for the folks who are working around the clock trying to hold it all together.
Madam Vice President.
To ensure that no future harm would occur. And this election in 20 days will determine whether we have a president of the United States who actually cares more about fixing a problem, even if it is not to their political advantage in an election, because there was a solution, Brett.
Madam Vice President, it was a policy decision in the early part of your administration. I will let one of the mothers talk about it. Take a listen.
Because of the Biden-Harris administration open border policies catch and release, they were enrolled in the Alternatives to Detention program. This meant that they were released into the United States. It was not even a full 3 weeks later that they would take my daughter Jocelyn Nungare's life. I believe the Biden-Harris administration open border policies are responsible for the death of my daughter.
That's the early days. So do you owe them an apology is what I'm saying.
I will tell you that I am so sorry for her.
Oh, here we go again with word salads about being sorry for the loss without answering a question. Do you apologize?
Loss. I'm so sorry for her loss. Sincerely. But let's talk about...
Is that an apology?
What is no. happening right now with an individual who does not want to participate in solutions. Let's talk about that as well.
But do you want to answer
in all fairness, I told you, I feel awful for what she and her family have experienced.
During that time, you said repeatedly that the border was secure. When in your mind did it start becoming a crisis?
A beautiful question. You said the border's secure. The border's secure. Remember all those interviews? The border's secure. The border's secure. So now you think it's a problem that a bipartisan piece of crap bill could fix. When did you first start thinking this is a problem? Let's wait for an answer. By the way, question number 7, she never gets asked. Thank you, Brett Baer.
I think we've had a broken immigration system transcending, by the way, Donald Trump's administration even before.
Wrong.
Let's all be honest about that. I have no pride in saying that this is a perfect immigration system. I've been clear. I think we all are.
You said the border was secure.
That it needs to be fixed. We need more. I was just down at the border talking with border agents, and they will tell you, and I'm sure you probably, I know you investigate and you are a serious journalist. They will tell you we need more judges. We need to process those cases faster. We need the support for
something
those.
You've not gotten
That's
done
a lie.
In
that is
4
a lie.
Years. 4 years. When the time comes to care for a loved one at the end of their life journey, that can be overwhelming. That's where Hospice Care is here to help. Hospice of the Red River Valley provides comfort, dignity, and peace for patients and their families. Their dedicated team of nurses and doctors and counselors are right by your side offering expert medical care and emotional support tailored to your needs. Let them help you focus on what matters most, spending meaningful moments together. Find out more at hrrv.org. And by the way, maybe you lost a loved one 2-3 years ago. You're still dealing with grief every day. They're there to help you too. HRRV.org, Hospice of the Red River Valley, dedicated to making each moment matter. Okay, back to the feud. Yes, this is what this is on the border, where Kamala Harris is actually being asked questions she never gets asked, in this case by Brett Baer from Fox News last night, and she is doing everything in her power not to answer them. We're up to 7 questions asked, 8 minutes into the interview, that she's never getting asked anywhere else. So far, 0 answers to those questions.
Those cases that should be prosecuted. They need more resources, and Congress ultimately is the only place that that's going to get fixed, Brett.
Well,
that's how the system works.
That's the premise of this question.
But
there were 90-plus executive orders that were rescinded in the first days. Many of those were Trump border policies. I'm not going to stay here because there's other things to talk about.
And you clearly aren't answering any of these questions.
You frequently talk to the Border Patrol Union for support of that bipartisan bill, and they did. They supported it. But they also just endorsed Donald Trump and said, you've been, quote, a failure with border security.
Oh, my gosh. Has anybody put that in front of her? Yeah, you're talking about how much you care about Border Patrol and the assets they need. They just supported your opponent and said you've been a disaster.
Why do you think they said that?
I think they're frustrated, and I get it.
Okay, this is actually an answer to the question.
Oh, you get it.
Right? They're frustrated, and she gets it.
They want support.
They want, and they're getting it from Donald Trump and not from you.
Want support, and that's what that border security bill would have done. These guys down at the border, these men and women, they're working hard. They're working around the clock. I get it.
There's a lot of people that look back at what you said in 2019 when you first ran for president.
Before we get to that, by the way, Brandon Judd has just responded to this. He is the former head of the Border Patrol Union. By the way, the new head of the Border Patrol Union and his members have endorsed Donald Trump for president. Very, very telling. What is the Border Patrol now frame of mind related to this? Kev, you have this clip from Brandon Judd?
Yeah, Fox and Friends had him on. And this is and again, I'm going to play a little Harris here. This is when Charlemagne asked her about taking some things. You and Biden have some accountability at the border. And
first thing we dropped was a bill to fix the broken immigration system.
There it is.
Which, by the way, Trump did not fix when he was president.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, and now Border Patrol agents are threatening to leave in droves if Harris wins. Days after giving Trump a unanimous endorsement by their union. Joining us right now is the former National Border Patrol Council President, Brandon Judd. Brandon, good morning to you.
Steve, it's good to be with you. Thank you.
Good to have you. Let's talk a little bit about what I just mentioned. First up, when we played that soundbite, she said, look, when Joe Biden and I came into office, the first thing we did was we dropped that bill regarding the border. It wasn't really about the border. It was the primary feature of the bill was to provide a pathway to citizenship for 11 million people who were in the country illegally. And they knew it didn't have a chance in Congress, and it never passed.
Yeah, and there were no border security measures in that bill. Again, like you just said, it was all about amnesty for those people that are currently here. So, again, when you look at that, that's the reason that Border Patrol agents right now just don't feel like their job means anything. That's why people are looking at leaving if she gets elected again. We all want to be able to feel like our job means something that we're able to accomplish. Right. And when we put that uniform on and do a very dangerous job, we want to go out and be able to protect the American people, and we just can't do that right now. You know, the joke right now is that we're the Welcome Patrol, not the Border Patrol, but the Welcome Patrol. We have no enforcement mechanisms right now, and that strictly falls on her head. It's extremely unfortunate that she just won't tell the American people the truth.
I thank you, Brandon Judd, for laying
that
it up.
That doesn't sound like a ringing endorsement or anything.
No.
Maybe I'm wrong.
By the way, I've been calling the Border Patrol the welcome wagon under Biden and Harris since the beginning, so I'm glad he...
You saw it. I still tell you, you were down there. You saw it.
The Welcome Patrol instead of the Border Patrol. Exactly right. So back to the Brett Baer interview. Let's see if there's some more questions here. She's getting asked about what she said in 2019. Never gets asked. Hey, you said this before. What about that? He's asking her now about that. Let's go there.
There have been changes, and you've talked about some of them. When it comes to immigration, you supported allowing immigrants in the country illegally to apply for driver's license, to qualify for free tuition at universities, to be enrolled in free health care. Do you still support those things?
Listen, that was 5 years ago. And
question was, do you still support those things?
And I'm very clear that I will follow the law. I have made that statement over and over again. And as Vice President of the United States, that's exactly what I've done, not to mention before.
If that's the case, you chose a running mate, Tim Walz, who, governor of Minnesota, who signed those very things into state law. So do you support that?
We are very clear, and I am very clear, as is Tim Walz.
We are very clear. Is that clear, Kevin, how clear she is? And Tim Walz is also clear.
Oh, crystal.
Very clear.
Crystal clear, yep.
That we're not going to answer this question.
That we must support and enforce federal law.
Okay, so you, as a candidate for president, said you wanted all those things. They're not currently the law, so the way you get out of this is by saying, I didn't get what I wanted, so now I'll just follow the law? Wait a minute. You want to be president. Are you going to push those policies that you previously said were there or not? Answer the damn question.
And that is exactly what we will do.
So decriminalizing border crossings, like you said in 2019.
I do not believe in decriminalizing border crossings, and I've not done that as vice president. I will not.
I said it, but I've not done it. So there, that should, you know, allow me to pat you on the head and have you go away.
I'll do that as president.
So these are evolutions that you've had.
But let's be very clear. I'm the only person who's running for president who has prosecuted transnational criminal organizations, from the Sinaloa cartel to the Guadalajara quote.
What the hell does that have to do with the price of fish? Here's the deal. You're being asked about your policies as a candidate for president that you
right
espoused
now. Yeah.
Now, the fact that you were some figurehead in a prosecutor's office in California's attorney general and 25 underlings are doing your work, and you're what else are you going to do? Tell them not to prosecute them? This means nothing.
Hotel, cartel to people who have trafficked in guns, drugs, and human beings. I have spent a significant part of my career going after people who present a threat to the safety of the American people and cross our border with the intent of doing us harm and cross our border illegally. And I will do that work as vice president. I take that work quite seriously.
This is a time when voters, especially here in Pennsylvania, are inundated with commercials and ads. They just want it to stop because it's every commercial. But many of them add noise, but a few of them seem to break through. This particular one from the Trump campaign has gotten a lot of attention.
Again, let's go to question number 9 that never gets asked about her. Here's what you said. Here's what you proposed, and here's the actual ad. Thank you, Brett Baer.
Kamala supports taxpayer-funded sex changes for prisoners.
Surgery.
For prisoners.
For prisoners. Every transgender inmate in the prison system would have access.
So are you still in support of using taxpayer dollars to help prison inmates or detained illegal aliens to transition to another gender?
I will follow the law. And it's a law that Donald Trump actually followed. You're probably familiar with, now it's a public report, that under Donald Trump's administration, these surgeries were available to, on a medical necessity basis, to people in the federal prison system. And I think, frankly, that ad from the Trump campaign is a little bit of like throwing, you know, stones when you're living in a glass house.
The Trump aides say that he never advocated for that prison policy and no gender transition
well,
surgeries
happened
during his
presidency. Well, you know
what?
You've got to take responsible for what happened
presidency.
In your administration.
Yeah, no.
Did you hear what you just said? You have to take responsibility with what happened in your administration.
Oh, there it is.
Okay. Well, that's an interesting take because we've got a long list of things we've just gone through that happened under your administration that you're trying to explain away. So we got caught in one there. But again, apples and oranges. The surgeries didn't happen under Trump. She's saying it was the law. She advocated for the law. So she's dodging again, but he's asking the questions.
No surgeries happened in this presidency.
It's
so
black and white.
Would you still advocate for using taxpayer dollars for gender reassignment surgeries?
I will follow the law, just as I think so.
It's not an answer. Are you going to advocate as you have in the past?
Say he did.
You would have a say as president.
He spent $20 million on those ads trying to create a sense of fear in the voters because he actually has no plan in this election that is about focusing on the needs of the American people. Whereas at $20 million on that ad, on an issue that as it relates to the biggest issues that affect the American people.
Just want to gently remind you, the question was, your policy as a candidate for president, are you still for that? Are you going to advocate for that? And this is now about Trump making it an issue. It's not the question.
It's really quite remote. And again, his policy was no different. Look at where we are, though.
They
on
say
plans for the American people, I'm offering a plan to deal with affordable housing. I'm offering a plan to deal with what we need to do to strengthen small businesses, which are the backbone of America's economy. I am offering a plan that is about taking care of young parents and giving them the support they need. My plans for the economy will strengthen the economy, as have been reviewed by 16 Nobel laureates, Goldman Sachs.
Goldman Sachs.
Yeah, let me look at the list of Nobel laureate economists on that list, too, that love that. They're all Cornell and Ivy League. You know who we're talking about.
A better way for her to say this is a bunch of liberals like my plan. That means nothing.
Her plan is nothing but money, 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 money. Here's money, there's money, your money. We're going to cut taxes. Rich are going to pay their fair share, which is there's not enough money on the planet.
But again,
the rich person on the planet.
The question's about her espoused policy from 2019 saying taxpayers should fund sex change surgeries for prisoners. This is what the question's about, and here's the answers we're getting.
And recently the Wall Street Journal, which have all studied our plans and have indicated my plans for our economy would strengthen our economy, his would make them weaker, would ignite inflation and invite a recession by the middle of next year. Those are the facts.
Why do you think more people say they trust him on the economy than they trust you.
I think that when you look at an analysis of our plans for what we would do as President of the United States, it has been clear to those who study and understand how economic policy works that moving forward, because I do believe the American people are ready to turn the page on the divisiveness and the type of rhetoric that has come out of Donald Trump. People
very, very interesting. Oh, yeah. Very interesting non-answer, but we got to turn the page, so we got to ask her about turn the page. She never gets asked about that either.
We're ready to turn the page from Obama and this nonsense. Whose page we're going to turn?
What are we turning the page from? Let's ask her that. That might be question number 10 that she never gets asked. let's do that when we come back on What's on Your Mind. Lowest price ever on pillows right now, MyPillow.com. Big box store canceled an order. That's how they roll against the MyPillow. Mike Lindell says, fine. Let's give the same deal to our fine listeners here at the program. So prices start at $14.88 for a standard MyPillow, $18.88 for a queen, buck more for a king. You can get up to 10 of them at one time. Go to MyPillow.com, promo code Scott, or call 800-506-9028. All right. Last of the interview snippets from last night. We're halfway through this interview, by the way, and the whole thing's been on the border. And Kamala's now trying to say, I want to talk about my plan for all kinds of things that are vacuous, starting to say it's time to turn the page. So let's hope she gets asked a question about turn the page from what? You're the vice president. Let's see how Brett Baer does here. Does he ask question number 11 that never gets asked? Here we go.
They're ready to chart a new way forward, and they want a president who has a plan for the future and a plan that is sound and will strengthen our country. My plan for the economy does exactly that. His plan would be, again, to give tax cuts to billionaires and the biggest corporations in our country and blow up our deficit.
It's interesting you said turn the page, Madam Vice President. You were asked on two different shows last week what, if anything, you would do differently than President Biden. Here's what you said.
Would you have done something differently than President Biden during the past 4 years?
There is not a thing that comes to mind in terms of, and I've been a part of most of the decisions that have had impact.
Under a Harris administration, what would the major changes be and what would stay the same?
Sure. Well, I mean, I'm obviously not Joe Biden.
I know.
And so that would be one change in terms of, but also I think it's important to say with, 28 days to go, I'm not Donald Trump.
So you're not Joe Biden, you're not Donald Trump, but nothing comes to mind that you would do differently?
Let me be very clear.
Oh, we're going to be clear again, Kev. Here we go. We get the benefit of clear.
My presidency will not be a continuation of Joe Biden's presidency.
All right. Well, that's Captain Obvious. I will say it's the closest.
And you won't, you're not Trump either.
To an answer, yeah.
Yeah, what are you? I mean, what right. Specifically, exactly.
And like every new president that comes in to office, I will bring my life experiences, my professional experiences, and fresh and new ideas. I represent a new generation of leadership. I, for example, am someone who has not spent the majority of my career in Washington, D.C.
Now, there's a little bit of a throw Joe under the bus there. So there's a quasi, answer there. She'd not spend her whole life in Washington. Refreshing.
I invite ideas, whether it be from the Republicans who are supporting me, who were just on stage with me minutes ago.
Liz Cheney's not a Republican anymore.
And the business sector and others who can contribute to the decisions that I make about, for example, my plan for increasing the supply of housing in America and bringing down the cost of housing. Addressing the issue of small businesses, which is about working with the private sector to bring more capital and access to capital to our small business leaders, including my plan for a $25,000 down payment assistance for first-time home buyers and for small businesses, extending the tax deduction from $5,000 to $50,000.
We've heard a lot about those plans in recent days. Your campaign slogan is a new way forward, and it's time to turn the page. You've been vice president for 3.5 years. So what are you turning the page from?
Boom. There's a question she's never asked. Will we get an answer? What are you turning the page from, woman?
Well, first of all, turning the page from the last decade in which we've been burdened with the kind of rhetoric coming from Donald Trump that has been designed and implemented to divide our country and have Americans literally point fingers at each other.
That was Obama.
Rhetoric and an approach to
last decade. So we're in 2024. So in 2014, who was president? Wasn't it Barack Obama?
Mm-hmm.
2015, who was president? Barack Obama. 2016, who was the president? Okay.
Trump.
So three of her 10 years were Barack Obama. Now we're 4 years. That to me, 4 plus 3 is 7. The last decade has been them, for crying out loud.
You are correct, sir.
So what are we turning the page from?
The leadership that suggests that the strength of a leader is based on who you beat down instead of what we all know. The strength of leadership is based on who you lift up. The strength of an American president, which is one who understands that the vast majority of us have more in common than what separates us.
Madam Vice President, more than 70% of people tell
pollsters. That is about turning the page on rhetoric that people are frankly exhausted of, Brett.
More than 70% of people tell the country is on the wrong track. They say the country is on the wrong track. If it's on the wrong track, that track follows 3.5 years of you being vice president and President Biden being president. That is what they're saying, 79% of them.
Okay, over halfway through the interview now, he has asked 13 questions she never gets asked. So far, fairly maybe a version of two answers. Let's see if this one gets an answer.
Why are they saying that? If you're turning the page, you've been in office for 3.5 years.
And Donald Trump has been running for office.
But you've been the person holding the office.
Come on.
Madam
Vice
President.
You and I both know what I'm talking about. You and I both know what I'm talking about.
I actually don't. What are you talking about?
What I'm talking about is that over the last decade, people have become. But listen, over the last decade, it is clear to me, and certainly the Republicans who are on stage with me, the former chief of staff to the president.
Oh, my gosh. You're not going to answer the question.
Oh, they are so done. They are so done.
So in the end, did this help or hurt her, do you think?
All I kept thinking as she's talking.
And the Oscar for Best Picture is presented to... And the Oscar goes to...
And the Oscar goes to...
Great performance, huh?
Kamala Harris!
Answers no questions. Back on What's On Your Mind, brought to you this hour by our friends at Cirrusset. There's something called seasonal affect disorder. It's obviously darker, longer.
Sad.
And, there's something called sad, which makes you sad. Causes lack of energy, depression, change in appetite, fatigue, sleep disorder. If you got any of that, Cirrusset can help. Don't let the extended darkness keep you from doing the things you love. Call Cirrusset today, 566-5231. 566-5231, online at Cirrusset.com. Cirrusset.com. Some of your comments on the Kamala Harris Brett Baer interview. Lister says, she sounds like a broken record blaming Trump for her and Biden's blunders, which credits them with the 79% disapproval by Americans that we're heading in the wrong direction, going 90 miles an hour down a dead-end street. Just like Hank Snow saying, Kamala acts like a dog chasing its tail in a circle when she's asked questions in an interview. It's not pretty. Another says, I watched her dodge and weave with Brett Baer, replayed it on Rumble, because I was ready to, and my frustration made me sleep poorly. Could you have at least issued a public service announcement that portions of your show today might trigger right-thinking Americans so we could play like some gospel or classical music in the background to soothe the rage that her BS induces?
Got to call it out. We can't ignore it.
Yeah.
There's too much at stake.
Another says, why did she say we are going to do as President of the United States? Who's we? What we are going to do is, it's her and Kamala.
Her and Tim, I guess.
Yeah, very interesting. Please, Scott, I can't listen to this nauseating woman anymore. Okay, we're done. Another listener said, are the tickets sold out for this evening's show? If not, how much are they and where can I obtain them? Two ways. Go to the website, am1100theflag.com. You can still obtain them. They start at $15. We have discounts for all kinds of folks, students and veterans and first responders, just kind of nice teachers too, law enforcement. And you can also just get them at the door tonight as well if you'd like. Michelle Tafoya, Liz Collin from Alpha News and the Fall of Minneapolis documentary will be in Fargo tonight. It is all about the election, the truth, and you from two real journalists. It'll be a great conversation. One and only Kevin Flynn is going to open up things for us, get us in a mood to sit down and tackle the tough issues, and then Michelle and Liz will take the stage for a bit, and then Steve Holstrom's going to sit down and have a conversation with both of them. Love to have you there. It'll be at the Avalon Event Center tonight. Program today brought to you by our friends at Sirisette. I told you that already, so let me get to our next guest. Michael Hushley is a farmer from Hitterdal, I believe. Is that right, Michael? You from Hitterdal?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yep. Told you, Scott.
And Michael called us yesterday with a couple of interesting theories about things in our food that are causing hormones to cause things that cause you to go, what is happening to this world? And specifically mentioned kids and children making decisions to say, I don't want to be a boy anymore, I want to be a girl, and tied that to our food. We didn't have a long time to talk about it, so I said, hey, Michael, do you mind coming back and chatting with us? So we're going to do that for a little bit. Scott Lauser is going to join us at the bottom of the hour, by the way, and we'll talk about an alternative plan on property tax relief in North Dakota. So we have that for you still coming up on the program. So we'll finish strong for you today. Anyway, Michael, appreciate you taking some extended time to talk a little bit about this. Tell us what you do.
Yeah. Well, I'm just starting off regenerative farming. Self-employed, I do hydraulic repair work for both the last 10 years, and I've got a family, and I'm trying to raise them healthy and keep my boys boys. So
what is regenerative farming? Explain that.
Well, there's probably a lot of interpretation of it, but if I was to sum it up, it would be farming from the soil and the ground up, and using symbiotic relationships with animals and what God has given us to give us nutrients and sustainability.
Okay, being a city boy, when you talk about that process, I need more detail. Well, give me an example of what that looks like.
So in the regenerative farm, it's a system that works off itself, and it's based off of taking care of the soil. And there's a lot of principles to the soil to take care of it, so you can have the production and get what you want out of it. But you use animals in rotational grazing settings. When you use multiple species and you only keep them in certain areas for very long, you don't need to use pesticides. You don't need to use all that other stuff because you have chickens following up after the cows and eating the bugs, and they're spreading the poop out, so it's not sitting there. And when the animals are consecutively moving, that's essentially the basic of how, regenerative farming is kind of maintained, where you don't need outside inputs to be purchased.
And just so folks understand, how is that different than what we would consider to be modern agriculture process today?
You put chemicals all over everything on modern agriculture, and it's usually a monocrop. I know we do crop rotations, but with comparing it to regenerative farming, it's still practically a monoculture, and then that gets into how we feed our animals, corn and soy. Some people do other things, but corn and soy are the staples. And regenerative farming, it's much more diverse in their nutrient intake. They're eating, my pigs are eating everything. It could be just every species of plant that I'm rotationally grazing them through the woods. And they're picking up that fungus, that bacteria, and all of that that God has given us to the earth that we are made of. These animals, which God has given us to preserve the earth, is transferred into us and our health, into our gut microbiome, which is directly connected to our brain.
Let me play you something that RFK Jr. has talked about, and I want to see if these dots connect. Listen to this.
I have a lot of plans for ending the corporate control over our food supply and over, our farmland and the destruction of our soils. I'm going to reverse 80 years of farm policy in this country, which have directed us toward industrial agriculture, industrial meat production, factory farming, chemical-based agriculture, carbon-based fertilizers, all of these things that are destroying the soils in our country. It's poisoning the food. The food that they produce is not even food anymore. It's commodities. And most of it's going to processed food companies that are using 1,000 ingredients that are all banned in Europe. And we have a chronic disease epidemic in this country that is being fed by processed food.
I could have done without the piano, but a little dramatic there. But you get the gist of it there. Yeah. Is he talking about what you're doing?
Yes. Yep. So the companies that he's referring to, and this is, I could draw this whole circle with the election and how it can pull over Democrat voters, but the companies, the millionaires and the billionaires, they are, you know, and I understand, like, you even have, you know, of course, and it's all business, but, you know, some of the sponsors and stuff to the radio station, it's everywhere. It's just part of our life. My hydraulic business, I work with everybody as well. But, so with the dependency on, what do you want to know specifically on, I guess, on industrial agriculture related to what he's saying? Like, do I agree with what he's saying? Yes.
When he talks about, like, reversing 80 years of farm policy or farm practices, agriculture practices, mm-hmm. in this country, that he's describing what you're doing in regenerative farming. That's what I'm just trying to understand.
Right, right. Okay, so... And he's saying a statement, but he's not saying a plan that's implemented. And when I've done my diligence on how this could be implemented, it's through stages. It's not, we need to get rid of this now. It's, you know, you do a quarter of land and you start the practice. There's people that are outside of the university system. Dr. Elaine Ingham is one of the soil food web is what I'm talking about for taking care of the earth. And that includes every part of the earth and how that gets into our body. But there is a whole system to phase all of this in.
Interesting. And that's one of the questions I had just on scalability, like how I would imagine.
Absolutely. It actually creates more farmers, more younger farmers, more localized food supplies. Everything is better.
Hold tight, Michael. We'll continue this conversation on the other side of the break. On What's on Your Mind? What's on Your Mind, brought to you in part today by Gateway Building Systems. Folks that understand the success of your farm is dependent on storage. As the number one Brock bin dealer in the U.S., they'll provide you with Brock solid bins, grain dryers, Millwright services, towers, conveyors, and more. They help farmers customize their operations, and their mission is to do just that for you. Planning, design, all the way to the completed, clean, and efficient farm site. Rest assured knowing Gateway's on the job with the best storage solutions. Take advantage of some discounts now on the Brock Solid Bins, too. For more, go to gatewaybuilding.com, gatewaybuilding.com. Chatting with Mike Hushley, a farmer from Hitterdal, who has just started regenerative farming, trying to understand this a little bit more. Scalability was one question I had, because obviously doing what you do, you can't do on a massive scale. Am I right?
Well, I guess I would say that would be an assumption. There are farmers out there, Gabe Brown, I believe, in South Dakota or North Dakota, I can't remember. Greg Judy, Joel Soliton, these are all regenerative farmers that are mainstream on YouTube. But it's done overseas as well. It's not surprising if people haven't really heard that it's scalable, because this type of information is suppressed. My friend that's mentoring me, the Dr. Elaine Ingham, it's not a state-run university, and she's kept it that way because there's certain information that they don't draw these correlations and conclusions that I'm talking about, and that's why you think of it as a theory.
You said something yesterday that intrigued me on this, specific to the whole gender confusion of youngsters. That seems to be
the endocrine disruption
proliferating.
Right. This is,
and you mentioned,
yeah,
the top
this
of,
is like what
you mentioned at the top of the conversation too, that one of the reasons you're doing this is because you want your boys to be boys. So connect those dots for me.
Okay. So there's endocrine disruptors. That's everything from, like atrazine, which I know the EPA and like there's been studies on it, but let's be honest where funding comes from for these studies. And we all know that the agencies are hijacked from a lot of these large corporations that are farming us. But the endocrine disruptors, when I just do a general search online, it's in our food system. It's highly found in beef, in commercial food industries. It's found in beef and dairy and, you know, pretty much anything that eats our food. But then what it's packaged into, it's not just eating at McDonald's and, oh, you're making a bad choice. You're unknowingly taking that burger out, which, okay, you're making a bad choice to eat fast food. But now there's chemicals that are on those wrappers that are these endocrine disruptors that are sometimes chemically castrating. They've constantly lowered what normal testosterone level is in males throughout history. They're just lowering the average bar. Therefore, we feel we're normal. So then the doctors can tell us that. You know, can you imagine how many sick people there would be if there was not abortion? Think of where the metrics would be in the graphs of where everything. They have abortions for all types of ailments. Think of where the graphs are already off the charts. Think of adding abortions into it, of why they got the abortion. So, but it's the methylation.
But help me understand.
It gets into the soil food web. Yep.
You lost me on the abortion. Are you saying that part of what prompts the decision to have an abortion is what's in the food?
No. No, I'm saying the amount of health problems is higher than we know of, than we can even put a number on, because some people have abortions based off of genetic mutations. When they get testing, oh, this baby has a problem, I'm going to abort it.
I see what you're
saying. So therefore, it never shows up in the total numbers of, oh, you know what I mean?
Yeah,
so it'll cause a woman to have an abortion because she's not mentally stable with not having all the chemicals. Sure, indirectly. But yeah, the methylation, people can be taking in testosterone, but if their endocrines are disrupted from these chemicals, then the methylation process doesn't happen. So you could take a test and say, oh, I have normal testosterone or estrogen. But it's not actually being converted. Methylation is the conversion.
What I'm hearing you say is essentially what Robert F. Kennedy Jr. is saying, is we're sicker than ever because of the food and what's
Yeah, and it's not just transgender. It's cancer. It's literally... So besides the sickness, some of these... You know, it's just normal to have toxins in our society. That's just going to happen. But it's in our insulation. It's everywhere. And there, okay, so I don't, our body, if we were to have healthy soil and our gut microbiome was healthy, let alone the poisons it's taking in, but if you were to take a genetic methylation test and you were to figure out exactly the deficiencies that you have and the blockages that you have, and then you design your diet based off of, and everybody is going to have different genetics. For instance, when I started farming, I've always eaten conventional. I actually used to ridicule organic, thinking it was a yuppie thing, not realizing really how I grew up on our small beef farm. It was organic. We just didn't call it that.
Yeah, interesting.
Now, when I have gotten into eating conventional pork, and I have my pasture pork, and my digestion turns for days because of my bacteria changed in my stomach. I raise pigs and I raise chickens. I can eat it and I'm healthy. I'm fine. If I have pork and eggs after church, my guts are turned for days. My sister-in-law, that her skin had irritation from it too. And it's a night and day difference.
Interesting. Running out of time here, but I want to get Abe and Moorhead in, who had a question or comment. Go ahead quickly, Abe.
Yeah. Hey, I'm actually studying the soil food web. I've completed their first course and going through for lab tech certification and such. I can elaborate on how the soil food web, regenerative farming, can be introduced to larger farms as well. I've done some experiment on some smaller farms, and then I've been looking at bigger farms to deal with, but it's amazing how well it can work if you put the right microbes into the soil instead of using chemicals. There's so many things out there that we don't understand about funguses and bacteria and stuff that we're just starting to learn, that it's just wild. So
thank you for contributing to that, Abe. Appreciate that very much. And Mike, just very interesting. I mean, I'm glad we got a chance to expand on.
Boy, is it, yeah.
On your call from yesterday. And again, I think that's one of the healthy things, for lack of a better term, that RFK Jr. has brought to the whole political debate. So we're at least thinking about this stuff and examining it a little
bit. Could I talk? We need to tell the people about the corporations are farming these people, and it's tied into the hospitals. It's tied into all of that, Kevin.
Yeah, I believe it. I believe it.
Interesting. Mike.
It is. It's tied into
1,000%.
Appreciate you.
We have to stop using toxic empathy and using compassionate empathy.
Good discussion. Appreciate your call. And
Spot on.
Welcome others on this talk as well. Measure four when we come back. Texter says they intentionally put chemicals to change our body chemistry to bring us into an Orwellian system the people go along with because they're sheeple. Another said potatoes engineered with no visible signs of rot. Send us a little photo of that. I find the conversation interesting. I think it's a good conversation to have. I think there's many layers to it. I don't automatically think that, you know, by modern farming practices, it means that somebody somewhere is going, okay, let's make all the boys girls. You know, I don't think that happens. I do think there's unintended consequences that sometimes come from this that are worth understanding and figuring out. But I'm interested in all sides of this conversation because I think it's, especially with the Trump victory and with RFK in there as a bit of a disruptor, what that's going to mean.
Yep. And if anybody's going to take that on, it's going to be RFK and the team he puts together.
Yeah, exactly. We're brought to you in part today by our friends at PetroServe USA. Home cook and grab-and-go convenience await you today for lunch. Chicken and gravy in Valley City, cheesy beef and potatoes in Harwood, Whoppin' and Taco Mac today. Castleton has lasagna. PetroServe USA, Cafe USA, they're the best. West Fargo, tater tot hot dish or beef stew. Fargo locations, meatball sub, 12th and I-29. Pulled pork downtown Fargo, 45th Street location has bacon cheeseburger mac out in Minnesota. You got stop at the Glendon location, always a great meal there. Taco Mac and Ada, lasagna in Euland, PetroServe USA. Also, portions of the program now until Election Day brought to you by Keep It Local ND. Find out more about them at keepitlocalnd.org on measure number four, which is part of our focus today with Scott Lauser, state representative. And it is a bill that has been proposed that would deal with the property tax issue. This conversation is one that I think is healthy about, okay, what are we paying for property taxes and why? What's the root cause? Representative Scott Lauser said, I'm going to draft a bill that I think will address this. And we're going to learn a little bit more about that bill today. Scott, how are you?
I'm good, Scott. How are you?
Wonderful. Thanks for taking the time. So was your intention to say, okay, not measure four, but here's something that I think would solve the. Is this supposed to be an alternative to measure number four?
Well, it's funny you lead off with that because that's every time I get asked to talk about this bill that comes up, and it's natural, of course, that should come up. As we ended last session, I want to give a little bit of the history of what happened here. As we ended last session, there was a private school voucher bill that I spoke against on the floor of the House. I offered some amendments to the bill that did pass the House and went over to the Senate. And the Senate amended the bill down, the amount of money, if I recall, was $3,500 down to $1,500, and then went to conference committee. I spoke against it again on the floor of the House after the conference committee, and it passed, but the governor vetoed. And the House did not override the veto, but the Senate did. So the bill did not get signed by the governor. And I told my colleagues and I told others, I'm not just standing up and saying vote no. I'm going to have a solution. I'm going to have a plan. But we're in the last week of the session, so I'm going to work on this. I combined the property tax idea that we'll talk about today with the private school accountability measure into the same bill. After bringing this out to the public in February, I have removed the language for private school accountability because there's other legislators working on specific bills, and this measure, this bill is specific to property tax, but I did that in April of 23. The committee did not go out and seek signatures or Secretary of State approval until the end of June of 23. So I've been working on this since before the committee went out to seek signatures. So I don't view this as a competing bill to that measure. And of course, would only be able to introduce it if Measure 4 failed. So I don't view it as competing, but I understand other people that would look at this would say, yes, you must be doing that. But the history shows that's not the case.
But they're both going to the same problem, right? That we have a pain point. The property taxes are too high and we need to do something about it. That's fair, isn't it?
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I applaud you for saying, okay, here's something on the drawing board. And by the way, if it had passed when you presented it before, then maybe you wouldn't have a Measure 4. But let's talk about what it would do, because my argument is Measure 4 is a sticky wicket without a plan. It relies on the fact that you're going to find $3.15 billion out of a $6 billion budget, and you're going to force 100 and some legislators to do that work for everybody else. And it's there's no plan there. It's crazy. On the other hand, I get people are frustrated with the fact that spending just goes up. Valuations go up and spending goes up. So, what do you do about it? Give me your alternative. What's a better way?
Well, I should mention when I brought this bill out in February, I was running for the school board in Minot. And so I'm very focused on school funding. I did get elected in June, so I'm serving in two different capacities. But this bill does two things. The first part of the bill has the state buying out the remaining 60 mills that are mandated by the state for K-12 education that are applied to your property taxes. If that just alone, that those 60 mills in the next biennium will amount to about $757 million. Now, what that does, there are still, the school boards still have the ability to levy an additional 10 mills to their general fund if they choose to, and an additional 12 mills for special funds if they choose to. This bill only covers the 60 mills that are mandated by the state, and it does not pay for any local bonding that the voters locally may have placed upon themselves for building a school, for instance, which we just did in Minot. We just opened Minot North 2 months ago. So all of that funding would stay local. So the state would buy out the 60 mills, and then the schools are naturally capped by their mill levy authority by the number of mills they're able to levy. This bill also includes a 4-4 increase year over year on the per pupil funding, which is another $185 million. So that's the first part of the bill, is the K-12 funding that is viewed by the state as necessary funding to educate kids will be paid for by the state. Then the other half, this has to work together. The other half of the bill caps the local political subdivisions, your counties, your cities, township boards, park boards. It caps them at a 3% increase per year on their budget that is related to property tax. So your property taxes could be reduced, for instance, by 25% in this bill, and then not automatically increase by 10 or 12 in the following year because the other political subs eat up that buy down. Now, there are some questions here because people have said, well, why would you cap the local political subs? And that's exactly the point here. We can't separate this bill because if you're doing the buyout, the other political subs have that opportunity to raise taxes and eat up that buy down. And that's what we've done before. The state has provided property tax relief, but we haven't done it dollar for dollar. And we've been trying to tackle this thing, I think, since 2011, since I've been there, but certainly prior to that, even when Senator Hovind was governor, the legislature was working on property tax, and we've never tried what I'm proposing. So it's buying out of 60 mills. It is capping local political subs. And by any measure, if anybody listening wants to see how this would affect their taxes, they should talk to their school board district manager or somebody on the school board or the superintendent. Anywhere between 25 and 40% property tax reduction right out of the gate if this were to pass.
And most importantly, I would argue, a cap on future growth. So they can't just ultimately say, "Wee, here we go. Now we can just eat back into that savings." The cap is the key here, correct?
Correct. I've talked to a lot of legislators. I've sent this bill draft to every sitting legislator. They all have a copy of it. This is a little bit rare. Typically in the interim committees do things and legislators get bill drafts prepared, but they don't share it this early. I've been talking to people since last spring about their ideas. And one of the ideas that came up was, where did you come up with a 3%? And I said, it's a starting number. I think it's appropriate. We tend to do 3% and 4% increases year over year in other budgets. And the suggestion was, why don't you relate it to the consumer price index? And I think that's a good idea. It's not in the bill yet, but in talking to people, talking to legislators, talking to other elected officials and to the public, most importantly, people like the idea of the caps.
No, yeah, that's a real component. What's the quote unquote cost of this? One of the things we hear about Measure 4 is that it's expensive. $3.15 billion a biennium and needs to come out of $6 billion in a general fund. What would this cost? What's the quote unquote cost?
Okay, so at the current projection, the 60 mills would cost $757 million over 2 years. And at the 4% and the 4% increase in the per pupil payment, that's an additional $185 million over 2 years. Now, we did a 4 and a 4 increase last session, so a 4 and 4 increase next session makes sense. And that's the money we send per pupil in the funding formula back to the school districts to fund education. Those two combined costs, the cost of this bill would be $943 million over 2 years. The Common Schools Trust Fund is kicking off enough interest that I think it would cover that $185 million increase. So by my calculations, we would need to spend $757 million over 2 years to buy out the 60 mills.
And do all property taxpayers get relief from this or just residential property?
This is all property. That $757 million on 60 mills is all property. That's assessed.
Is there a way to differentiate that, to say that income-producing companies, for instance, would not be exempted? Can you do it for residential only?
We could. That's not what this bill does. This is property tax relief across the board for all property owners. I think you bring up a good point that I think that's going to happen when this bill gets actually introduced and heard. If it gets introduced and heard and Measure 4 doesn't pass, there's going to be questions all over the place, similar to what you just asked. And then it's at the mercy of the committees that hear it. And of course the House and the Senate to come to some resolution. That would be one way to reduce the cost, is to limit who gets this relief.
And spending decisions are still made locally. Then you don't lose that local control on what's spent.
Yeah,
would be another
absolutely.
Element. Short break, back with more with Scott Lauser, state representative, on a plan that's actually been around pre-Measure 4, but would obviously, if Measure 4 didn't pass, be an alternative. What do you think of it? Questions or comments, welcome. 271-1100. Text us 237-1590. More after this. Indoor air quality experts that have taken care of our schools, clinics, hospitals, long-term care facilities, the pros are H.A. Thompson & Sons. They can do the same for you. In your home, tired of the stuff in the air? You don't know what's there, the mold, the viruses, all of it. Clean the air. Do it with the pros. And quite honestly, they have the knowledge and the technology on all of the big projects that allow you to do this very simply and affordably in your own home systems as well. Find out more at hatandsons.com, hatandsons.com. More with Scott Lauser, state representative from Minot. Couple questions here. One listener says, if Measure 4 passes, and I think it will, what is the legislature's plan? And please don't tell us they're cutting police, firefighters, and all the other scare tactics used.
Well, I don't know that the legislature yet has a plan. I believe the budget section, which is a compromise of the House and the Senate in the interim, it's all of the appropriators in both chambers and the leadership are working on ideas for a budget that would include the passage of Measure 4 or not, but the Constitution would mandate that $3.15 billion essentially be block granted to every political subdivision. So I don't see the argument out of the gate saying that police and fire would be cut because that funding would be replaced with state dollars. The question is, where do the state dollars come from? And the measure doesn't say where that comes from. So I know there's talk about a potential increase in sales tax at the state level. There's going to be some cuts elsewhere, but that would be the first thing the legislature has to work on because it's a constitutionally mandated $3.15 billion spending. So that money will go out to those local political subs. I can't say that there's a plan in place for that to happen. And I'll even say this, if Measure 4 passes, I don't believe the legislature will be able in 80 days to address all the impacts within the Century Code. And very likely the new governor will have to call us back for a special session after our session ends to be able to catch up on what we missed. That I just think that's going to happen. We're going to have a busy 2025, but that doesn't take away from the other 800 to 900 bills that are going to get introduced for people that you know want their bills to be heard as well.
Another listener says, I'm a county maintenance guy, road grader, snowplow. I now understand the property tax measure would remove the power of the purse from the county. State would take the power. Remind your listeners about washboard on the dirt roads if Measure 4 passes and the state takes complete control on the purse of the counties. So there's somebody from the county level that's worried about what the other person says we don't need to worry about.
Well, I understand the keep it local and the local control argument. This is giving money from the state to the locals, and those local elected officials are making the decisions how to spend the money they receive. It's just a different source of income. So I do believe those decisions are still going to be made local, but your listener is right. The money is coming from the state, and we know what happens in government when the money comes from the federal government to the state. It comes with strings attached. And that may happen in the future. I don't know. But those local decisions are still made by those local elected officials, regardless of the source of funds.
Texter says, Scott Lauser is a good representative. I applaud his efforts. But what are the chances it passes? How does this protect the elderly with fixed budgets? Property taxes are already too high. Capping an already high tax isn't a great answer.
Well, I want to thank my family for sending that one in. The cap is on the other political subs. The reduction in the mills is the relief that you would receive. And in Minot, so I'm done this locally, specifically, this would be a 48% reduction in the portion of your property taxes levied by schools. Overall, it would be a 26% reduction in your property taxes with the state buying out the 60 mills. So there are two elements to this. You're right, capping an already high tax doesn't necessarily reduce your tax. In Minot, by the way, the city council just passed a budget. They are up 13% overall, as I believe Fargo was up 11%. But the portion of the taxes that are the portion of the budget that was collected in property tax in Minot, the levy went down by 15%. So there is an argument I've heard people say, well, if you put a cap, the local political subs will just go to the cap. And history shows otherwise. We did the same on the school board. We reduced 3 mills on the school board in Minot, and the city council reduced their portion of their budget that was collected from property taxes by 15.6%.
William and Fargo, real quick, running out of time here, unfortunately. Your question quickly for Scott Lauser?
Yeah, why not just do it, base your property taxes on what you buy your house for, and as long as you live in the house, that's what your property tax value is. So if I bought my house at $250,000, I'm taxed at $250,000 until I sell that house. That would solve it for the people that have fixed incomes. And then when, because technically my house has no value.
Yeah, I hear you. And we hear that a lot. I wish it was on the ballot, actually. That would be common sense. But what about his idea, Scott?
Well, that's been tried in a few other states, and they've had a lot of problems. And my premise here is the problem is not actually the tax. The problem is the spending on the budgets on the local political subs and all of the problem is spending and budgets. The problem then filters over to the property tax owner. I understand the argument. That's tried and failed in a few other states.
Interesting. William, appreciate it. We've heard that from others as well. Scott, good on you for having an alternative out there that's actually been around before Measure 4. And if Measure 4 does not pass, deserves consideration on a property tax relief plan. Thanks for taking the time. Glad caps were involved. That's a discussion that's necessary. We'll talk again soon. Take care.
Thank you.
God bless, folks. See you tomorrow on What's on Your Mind for a Friday edition.